Welcome everyone to another JP show. Today we have a special program for you. As
indeed,
we, a very unique and deep program. We were able to interview a woman by the name of Mrs. Devorah Kay, who lives in Israel. We don't want to give away the story, but she's a source of tremendous courage, strength, faith, and resilience. As we record this intro, we've already done the interview. Rabbi Levy, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was very, very inspiring. You will definitely get strength, inspiration, and yeah, for sure. It's very relevant to the times we're living in now. I thought it was incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, so I thought it was very, like you say, very relevant to what's going on now, but also relevant to the time of the year and the calendar. Last week we had Tisha B'Av, which was the day that we remember the pain of, and destruction throughout the ages, starting from the destruction of the temples. And then we have the 15th of Av, which was just this past Monday, which Kabbalah tells us is a special, I mean, the Talmud says it's considered a special festival. And Kabbalah explains because there's a full moon, and the full moon represents the strength and the perfection that comes after struggle and challenge. And I think that's very much about what this is all about.
For sure.
So,
I think everyone should listen to it very carefully and take it to heart and get inspired.
Yes, we hope you'll become as inspired as we were. So thank
Enjoy.
You for that. And listen, absorb, be inspired, and we'll talk to you next series.
And send it around. Send it around.
Yeah,
subscribe
yeah.
to the podcast so you get the next one and all the future ones.
Absolutely.
Enjoy, everyone.
You are listening to the JP Show,
where we discuss the issues you care about from a Jewish perspective.
I am Rabbi G.
And I am Rabbi Levy.
And we hope you enjoy this episode. Okay, we are joined by Mrs. Devorah Kay, all the way from Israel. Welcome. Devorah and her husband Avi made Aliyah from South Africa a few years ago. And then, tragically, a few years ago in 2021, their son Eli, who served in the IDF, was killed in a terrorist attack in the Old City near the Kotel, near the Western Wall, where you worked as a tour guide. So I heard you speak recently, I think it was Jerusalem. I saw a video and I was very inspired and uplifted by your incredible message, which I think carried a combination of the pain that one always carries with in such a circumstance, but together with tremendous positivity and strength. And I thought it would be amazing to share, if you could share on our podcast, the JP podcast, which we have here in Sydney. So if I can just ask you, maybe just to begin, just tell us a little bit about Eli.
Thank you so much for hosting me, first of all. It's always an honor and a privilege to be part of these podcasts that reach people that we may not always be able to reach and connect with different people. And especially, you know, being in Australia, which is pretty far away, it's just amazing that we're able to connect in this way. So thank you for having me. So Eli was the first of our children who was absolutely determined that when they finished school that he was going to come to Israel. He's our second son. And he was, even from a young age, showed very strong connection to Israel and felt very passionately about it. And then in year 11, he came on a school trip, and that was it. He was absolutely adamant that as soon as he could, he was coming back. He did actually spend a year in Australia after school in Yeshiva in Melbourne, first of all, in YG. And then after that, he said he's got to come to Israel. That was kind of his bridging to get into the yeshiva world. And then he came to Israel and he came to Kiryat Gat, which is a Chabad yeshiva in Kiryat Gat in the south. And he was adamant that he was going to draft to the IDF. He knew from the beginning that he wanted to get into the paratroopers, the Tzanchanim unit. And he also knew that he wanted to make Aliyah and he wanted to make a life for himself in Israel. And so he followed that dream. And he drafted to the IDF. He was in Tzanchanim. He became a commander in the Tzanchanim unit. He actually served on the Gaza border during some very tricky times. And he was fulfilling what he saw as something crucial as a Jew, as a person, as a young adult. And after his army service, unlike actually many youngsters who finish army service, he didn't leave Israel. He went straight away to work for Hashomer HaChadash, which is an agricultural organization in the south. And he worked for them. He actually lived on Kibbutz Nirim, which many people now know about because it's literally on the Gaza border. And he always
Wow.
said to us, "Don't worry, I live in my Mamad, in my safe room." And he said, this is he was living the dream, so to speak. He really felt that he was a chalutz, he was a pioneer, he was working in the field. He became a manager, and for 2 years he worked for Shomer HaChadash and was very passionate and very Zionistic. And following him coming, two of our other sons followed in his footsteps, and our younger son came and also studied in yeshiva and then drafted to the army. And our older son also decided that this was something he was doing as well. And he was a bit older at that stage, and he also drafted to a special forces unit in the army. At no point did we have all three of them in the army at the same time, but we did have two of them. And Eli was the trailblazer. He was the Nachshon Ben Aminadav. He stood in the water first, and the others followed along. And during his time of working for Shomer HaChadash, he also did a tour guide course in Sderot because he wanted to learn more about the land. And after the 2 years, he felt that things were changing in the kibbutz, and his friends were going into different places. And so he actually took a position at the Kotel, at the Western Wall, as a tour guide. And he had recently started that job. He started the job at the end of July, the beginning of, yeah, the end, about the end of July of 2021. And tragically, he was killed on his way to work in November 2021, 21st of November 2021. So Eli lived, so to speak, everything that he believed in. But what was very unique about him is that he connected to so many different types of people. He'd been through the yeshiva world, and then he'd been through the army, and then he'd been through different stages in his own religion and in finding himself and deciding what was right for him. And because of that, he connected to so many different types of people, religious, non-religious, to the point that when we were sitting Shiva and we had all these interesting people coming to our apartment, and we said, "Where do you know Eli?" Everyone had a story. And it's not even 3 years, and we are still meeting new people. Just last week, where we planted a vineyard in Eli's memory, we met new people who we'd never met before, who Eli
Where
had
where's
contact.
the vineyard?
The vineyard is in the south. And this has been a dream for the last 2 years of doing an agricultural project. And it's connected with Kibbutz Lahav, which is a kibbutz in the south. And we have planted a vineyard in Eli's memory, firstly, to work the land, secondly, because Eli loved wine, and thirdly, it's now being planted and grown by and part of a program for those who are suffering from PTSD from this war.
Wow.
We actually had groups of soldiers as part of their rehabilitation coming and actually planting and setting up the poles. So it's a very big project, and it's also a forever project because these grapes will be grown, and then the next lot will be grown. And we've connected with Yatir Winery, who's going to be producing the wine, and we're going to have a white label, the LEK label. We've set up a project. The LEK project is a broad umbrella for different projects that we're going to be doing in Israel, working with youth, working with PTSD, working with people from outside of Israel. When groups come, they'll be able to come to also work the land, etc. And we really felt straight away that these were projects that Eli left his mark in this world, and we've got a job to continue that legacy. And that was something
Wow.
we knew right from the beginning. So that's a little bit about Eli in a nutshell.
Yeah, and on that very sad day, I remember reading somewhere that he was on the way to the Kotel, he was carrying his tefillin. Is that correct?
That is correct. So it's quite interesting about Eli is that he'd been through some religious challenges, and he wasn't sure if religion was for him. And we'd had some pretty heated discussions about it, of course, me being the mother and thinking that I knew what my child wanted, and him being the child and saying, Ma, you don't necessarily know what I want. And to be honest, I wasn't sure he was putting on tefillin. But yet, the last conversation I had with him was on the Thursday before he was killed. That was our Shabbat, pre-Shabbat chat. And he said he was phoning to find out. In fact, he phoned my husband, and I answered my husband's phone because he was on a business call, and he wanted to find out what he could buy to keep to heat up his food for Shabbat that week properly, so that he could keep Shabbat like 100% that week. He wanted to do it like all right. I was like,
Wow.
wow, that's unbelievable, Ellie, you know. Sure. And I told him, like, go and buy a slow cooker, a crock pot, I'll pay for one, whatever it takes. And we spoke about a timer and could he warm up the soup on the timer. Of course, he knew the halakhot, but it was more about the practicalities.
Wow,
And
amazing.
yet, when he was killed, he had in his backpack his tefillin and actually a book of Chassidut as well, a Likutei Sichot. And when we sat in Shiva and we opened this book and we showed his friends with that it actually had a bullet, you know, through it. They said, yes, we know this book. We've learnt it with him. He's taught it to us.
Oh,
So
wow.
even during the time where we thought that perhaps he was doing this or that, and it really gave me a wake up as a parent, is that have a little bit more faith in our kids. Have a little bit more faith that they're on the track. And sometimes we just need to, and we try to love and support them unconditionally. And I think many of the times we do, but we're surprised as parents. We're really surprised.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
So, like you said before, it hasn't, it's just been 3 years or just under
Under
3 years.
3 years. Yeah.
So, I heard you speak, and you just had the most uplifting and positive and strong, inspiring message. So, share it with us. What is it that keeps you going, and what is that message?
So, as I mentioned when I spoke, and I stand by this, is that we had quite a lengthy period on the morning that Ellie was killed of actually finding out what had happened. And it was a number of hours until we actually were told, etc. And we ended up being told in the hospital that Ellie had been taken to about 6 hours after the incident happened. And we were all in this room, and my eldest son broke the news to us. He'd found out. It's a long story, maybe for another conversation. And immediately on hearing the news, I turned to my children who were with me then, not all of them were. And I said to them, I said, we will be okay. We will be okay. We will get through this. And I don't think I realized what a big statement I was saying at the time. But it is a mantra that I live my life by from then until now. I feel strongly that this tragedy could not define who we are. This tragedy could not bring us down. Your child does not get handpicked in the way Ellie was handpicked for no reason. You do not have 17,000 people at a funeral of someone who'd only been in the country a few years. If there is not more of a job, if there is not a further plan to this, I don't know what that plan is. I may never know what the plan is, but I knew from those early moments that I needed the strength to go on in a different kind of way. You know, there've always been these statements like God doesn't give things to people they can't handle, and God doesn't test people. And I don't know about that. I'm not sure that anyone ever wants to be tested in any of the challenging ways that life has to give them. But I would say that when tragedy comes your way, you do have a choice as to how you are going to deal with it. It's not always an easy choice, and not for everybody in my family was it the easiest of choices. Every one of us managed in our own way. Some managed the tragedy in a different way from others. I don't want to say in a better or a worse, because I think that mourning is a very important part. However, when we dig deep and we say that we are going to do something meaningful with this, we are not going to let this tragedy define us. We are going to use this tragedy to make a difference to other people's lives. It's a mind shift. And I would say that from those few moments right in the beginning, that is the mind shift that I took on. And that's the mind shift that I live my life by. We all have choices when hard things come our way. And I always say it doesn't have to be the death of someone. It could be anything. Every single person has challenges in their life. There is no such thing as no challenges. But we have to decide how are we going to let it define us. And I always do use the example of pulling that duvet over my head, over our heads, and saying, I can't move. I can't get up. And then analyzing and saying it, why can't I get up? Why can't I move forward? And thank God I had the strength and the ability to be able to do that. And I understand and respect that not everybody can. But this is how I live my life. However, there are times where it's not so easy. There are days that I don't necessarily feel so strong. But even on those days, I push myself. I know when they're coming on. I can feel them, whether it's a Eraveli's birthday or whatever it is. And sometimes I allow myself just to go with it. And that's also okay. Just to be in that moment and know that today is just going to be one of those days. But on
Amazing.
the whole, I do try to live my life in a meaningful way. And one of the things that struck me very strongly was during Shiva, there was an organization that came in to visit us. And there are many, unfortunately, there are many organizations in Israel that are there to support people in our situation. And this organization came in. It was very, very kind of them to even come and to visit us. And the one woman turned to me and she said, "Welcome to the club. You're now part of our club."
Wow.
And I looked at her and I said, "I am not part of any club. I'm not a groupie. I've never been a groupie. And I'm not going to be a groupie now." And I'm not minimizing the work that these organizations do. However, for me, that was not my identity. I am not going to be a victim of terror. I have the status in this country, but I'm not going to take on the victim mentality. I am not a victim. I have had a terrible tragedy happen to me in my life. My family have had a terrible tragedy. But Ellie would not have wanted us to sit and mourn and let this tragedy define us. And that's how I view it.
That is so powerful. So I'm hearing two things coming together here. I just want to clarify maybe just a few. You're talking about not defining and not being a victim, but I'm understanding that the way you're doing that is to give the whole thing meaning and purpose, and to keep working to bring more meaning in his memory and more meaning to your life, and meaning and purpose.
So yes, there's really two aspects to this. One is the
So
personal.
do those things go together? I mean, they seem to me like they help each other, kind of thing.
So yes and no. I believe, and I stand very strong in this belief, that when there's something like this has happened, you do need to do something with it to make a difference. However, there is another side to this. You can't lose sight of things that are important in your life to you. I also knew from very early on that my whole world was not going to be defined now by LEK projects. We knew immediately that we were going to do projects. We knew that this would give us a platform. I myself have been involved in education in South Africa, in Jewish education, for 30 years. I love my profession, and I would like to say I was probably a, I think I was a love teacher. This has given me perhaps more of a platform to connect with more people because of it. I've had the opportunity of traveling to schools. I've been in the UK numerous times, in schools, speaking to kids, doing things that, perhaps as my identity before, I wasn't able to do. So I'm using it as a springboard to be able to connect with people. When groups come to Israel, when birthright groups come to Israel, and we stand on Har Herzl, which is not where Eli is buried, because he wasn't currently in the serving in the IDF at the time he was killed, but he is on the memorial wall. And you talk about somebody who was killed at 25, who maybe fulfilled more in their lifetime than some people do in their entire life of 120. And you make a connection with the youth. You make a connection with the future. It's a springboard that I can use to have a connection to others. And that's an incredible opportunity. So it's taking something that I felt very passionately about before, and it's helping me to be able to connect to others because now through Ellie, I have maybe perhaps more of a name. So that's the one side of it. The other side of it is that I'm furthering things that were important to me. And it's defined for me how important the things that I wanted to do before are, even more so. And that's something that I'm involved in full time. As I mentioned in the talk I gave, I've gone back to full time studying. I'm a full time student completing my psychology degree because I want to have a license in Israel, because I want to work with people in Israel. And that's not because of Eli. I was studying before Eli was killed. But what shifted is I was doing it online. And I realized sitting at home, online, working through a university in the UK was not necessarily something that was going to be helpful to me. I need to get out. I need to connect with people. And so I've gone to a university in Israel, which, by the way, I don't make myself known there. I'm just a Vorokei. A lot of people don't know who I am. And some people do know. And sometimes someone comes over to me and says, "Aren't you Eli K's mother?" But on the whole, I'm anonymous there. And that's the way I've chosen for it to be there, because that's me, Devorah Kay, in the life that I want to lead, separate to what has happened to my family. So, yes, on the one hand, the projects that we are doing, the vineyard, the Torah, the house for soldiers that we've created in Kfar Chabad, all of these things are important and they're a part of us, but they don't define us. So it's about the balance. And are they helpful? Sometimes people say to me, it must be very helpful to do these projects. And I guess in many ways it is helpful, but it's not as if our whole life is devoted to these projects. Sometimes it's just nice to be anonymous. Sometimes it's nice to go out with your friends and go to a winery and drink wine and have a good time. And we do that. And another thing is, I'm so grateful because we'd only been in Israel for 11 months before Ellie was killed. We made Aliyah in the heart of COVID. We were locked up in a hotel room in Tel Aviv. We didn't know anybody. We came to Modi'in through the hand of Hashem, the hand of God, literally. We didn't know a soul. And we made hard and fast friends very quickly. And that's another thing I say, that thank God when our tragedy happened, we had those close friends, and it wasn't all of a sudden forming friends because of our circumstances. And these are ways where you don't let your tragedy define you, and you don't only involve yourself in doing things because of your circumstances.
Wow. So if I could just ask you one more question. I mean, that's amazing. Sure, that's really been amazing. Just to shift that direction a little bit, but still connected. So I live in Sydney, Australia, and talk to people here, and obviously I have family in Israel, talk to them. So Am Yisrael right now is going through a bit of a collective trauma, tragedy, challenge, whatever, however you want to define it. So how can you share some positivity, some inspiration that you've maybe internalized personally on a more collective level?
I can do that. I also just want to share with your listeners that on the 7th of October, when the war broke out, all of my children were called up to the army.
Wow.
Just to say that after Ellie was killed, my daughter also drafted to the IDF. She was in a
Sure.
combat unit as well. At that point, my boys had finished. At the time when the war broke out, she was serving. She was the only one of my kids who was in Sadir, who was in the actual, as a soldier. My other kids were considered for Milouim. And on the 7th of October, after it was Yom Tov, and my daughter was actually home, she was off for that chag. and we heard the rockets, and we didn't know what was going on. And there was a knock on the door, and there was a chayelet, there was a soldier at the door, and she said, "Where's Nama?" That's my daughter. And she said, "Nama, put your phone on. There's a war. We're going to war. Get yourself to the base." My daughter was like, "What? What do we do?" She put her phone on, and within 2 hours, she had gone.
Wow.
By the end of Yontav, which was only one day for us, my other two sons and my daughter-in-law had been called up and went. For the first 4 months of this war, all of my kids were fighting in this war.
Wow.
My boys were in Gaza, and as I sit here today, just short of a year almost of this war, my youngest son is back in Gaza.
Wow.
So, what can I tell you? When they came to tell me that they were going, my heart was heavy. And my heart is heavy. But I also know that they are living with meaning and purpose. And I can't stop them from doing the things that they feel is meaningful in their life because of Ellie or because of our tragedy. And I don't say that easily. There are days when we're very anxious. On the other hand, I also understand that Ellie lived on the Gaza border for 4 years, between the years he was in the army and the years that he was in working for Shomer HaChadash. At one point, he had rockets falling on him, and his soldier, he was the commander of, turned to him and said, "Are we going to live or are we going to die?" And he said, "I don't know." So what I know is that it's not always about a war and it's not always about Gaza, because we are not in control and we are not in charge. So what can I say about the collective efforts of this war is that it's tough. It's really, really tough. But yet, at the same time, living in Eretz Israel and being here and being part of this is something that is inexplicable. On Sunday, I decided I was getting out of Modi'in. I was going to Tel Aviv. Very brave, big move. Haven't been to Tel Aviv in a while. Go to Tel Aviv. We walk along the promenade. I said to my husband, "Look at all these people. They're playing ball. You'd never believe that there's a war going on here." We leave the promenade. We start walking. We hear sirens. You may have seen there was a terror
Yeah,
attack.
sure.
We were there.
Unbelievable.
Not only were we
Unbelievable.
there, our entire data on our phone, our connection, we couldn't get out of Tel Aviv. We'd gone in by train. We couldn't get the MOVEit app to work. We couldn't call a taxi. We didn't even know there was a terror attack because we couldn't get onto the news. The whole system had shut down. We
Oh my gosh.
eventually got home at 11 o'clock that night. And we're like, "Really? Is this how we're living?" And it is how we're living. It is how we're living. But somehow, there is so much meaning to that life. And I keep having these thoughts of wrapping my family around me and getting on a plane and going somewhere. And I'm thinking, where are we going? Where are we going? And if there's one thing that Ellie's tragedy has taught us is during the week of Shiva, I had an interview, I think, with Arut Sheva, and they said to me, "So when are you leaving the country?" And I said, "Leaving? Where am I going? Which country is going to have me? Look at the support. Look at what's going on over here." And you really feel Am Yisrael Chai. You really feel connected.
That is
And
unbelievable.
that's the story of the war. But it's not always easy. And I don't want to make out that it is always easy, because
No, I
it's
think that's important. No,
stress.
thank you for that.
It's
That's very
stress.
clear.
But it's real. And in many ways, wouldn't have it any other way.
That's incredible. So let me just say thank you so much for coming on, because that's, I think, the most, I think our listeners are going to find that completely uplifting and inspiring and strengthening. And let me just finish by giving you and your family just a bracha for simcha, for strength, for koyach, and only good things. May your children all be safe and return safely.
Amen.
And I'm Yisrael Chai, and let's all merit. Hopefully, we'll see soon the end, the decisive end of this whole journey, and only good things ahead.
Praise God. Amen.
Thank
Amen
you
to
very,
that.
very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. All the best.